inbound. Wait for the whole machine to drop. KQLIW.
I think we would be better off putting a transponder, not a repeater. Personally, I would prefer people do their own thing and have it come back, but that's just my thought.
And I have to see the cat.
So I'll see you guys in a minute. 10-2MB.
Come on, PJ.
Here, Obama. Obama, here comes the food. Obama, somebody's about to give you some food. Thank you, Barry.
Yeah, I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Barry's cat's name is Obama. What did you just ask her, John? Go ahead.
Oh, I pity that poor cat. Oh, my God. You know, don't forget, when we started with the International Geophysical Years down in the Antarctic, also in the north, when we did it in, not Alaska, but up in the North Pole, we used the cut and cover. And if you think about that, much smaller machine could make the cuts. And then they could cover the top. Instead of using the Quonset hut type metal, they could use plastic or carbon fibers, things like that. That's what we usually do when we start to establish any kind of a base, and then we work from there. So that might even work out on the moon. Of course, the equipment would be a lot lighter, and we'd still have the energy problem, but that eliminates a lot of transportation of really heavy stuff. So they may even try that. That might be a way to go. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
John, is there a website I could go to where I could read about that approach?
Cut and cover is how they did the subways originally before the tunnel boring machines. They would rip a trench in the street, build the tracks and all, and then just cover it up with supports. You could just research the subway rail system in New York, and you'll find out a lot about cut and cover.
Yeah, I've seen some PBS specials on that. Or maybe it was a movie on channel 25-3. What, in your opinion, John, what percentage of the New York City subway system was built by cut and cover as opposed to a boring machine? Was maybe a third of the subway system built that way in the early days?
In the early days, almost all of it, but it didn't last long because it was too inconvenient for the merchants, especially in the hot areas. So that's when they forced them to go underground like miners, and it caused them to have more support structures. Then, don't forget, they were only dealing with one level. Now you have three, four levels of subways and the subways. So, yeah, it's a different situation today. But I would say maybe 10% of the subway or 15% of the subway that exists now was done by cut and cover.
Was cut and cover ever done for more than one level? Question number one. And question number two, when you're doing this cutting and covering, it's going to have to be parallel to a New York City street. You're not going to dig up a three-story building, if you know what I mean. So when you have to make cross tunnels between the individual subway lines, that sounds like a bit of a problem. Over to you, John.
Yeah, Dick, you're absolutely right. Don't forget, the infrastructure grew, and now we really couldn't do much cut and cover at a depth because of all of the infrastructure of steam lines, communication lines, electric lines. In the city, if you ever look at the grid of services, it's really a mess down there. And there are pipes down there that are 100 years old that are still being used, and a lot of stuff cut and cover would be very difficult to do today. And yes, it did follow the path of the streets originally, but there wasn't much in the streets except for water mains. Most of the telephone lines in those days were up in the air, not underground like they are today. So cut and cover is difficult in a major city today.
Yeah, below grade these days. Let me drop and see if we can get these. Okay, Eastern Input just came back. Nowadays, you've got a huge number of communication cables, power cables, water, gas, steam, fiber optics. Boy, if you looked at a three-dimensional map of Manhattan, of all the stuff that's below grade, subway lines, all those communication lines, all those water, great big water pipes, wow. It's only taken, 200 years to get what's there. But boy, there's a lot of stuff there. Is there a cubic foot of dirt anywhere in Manhattan that doesn't have something penetrating it, John? Over to you.
Probably not, Dick. I don't know of any area that is really untouched. Downtown, of course, is full. There may be some areas when you get up near the upper part of Broadway that may still be a little light in infrastructure, but boy, in the major portions where I was underneath, and as Paul knows, when you're dealing with liquid steam, those tunnels are extremely dangerous. When something happens there, if there's anybody, it blows off manhole covers. The manhole covers weigh 100, 120 pounds. They blow them off like they're pennies. Unbelievable amount of things that can happen. Plus, some of the electrification areas, when they have shorts, the same thing. Oh, it's tough under there, Dick.
K2UPS Mobile.
K2UPS, K2LIW. Go ahead, Rich. And I know the 375 machine has dropped out a number of times. I imagine you've heard some discontinuous conversations during your trip. Back to you, Rich.
Good evening, Dick. Now, I've heard the entire thing. I've lost it once or twice just due to cell lapse, but I don't lose it when 375 goes out. I was just curious if anybody knows it. You happen to mention it before I can get into to ask about it, but a 3D model of Manhattan, or 3D rendering, showing, the subway lines, the major water supply and steam lines, not necessarily gas and electric stuff, but the big stuff that's underground and the multi-levels. It would be fascinating to see a 3D rendering. Like, have you ever seen where they take molten metal and pour into these anthills and then dig it up and you see how much of it is underground? That would be an interesting thing to see. I don't know if anybody knows that something like that exists, or that would be cool to see that. Back to that.
The guy I would go to find out if that exists is on Staten Island, and I'll bet you his very wise Esquire plotter has even plotted some of that. Is that true, John? KC2WGB, K2RAW.
Yes, Dick. Yeah, very true. A lot of it. Now, 3D imaging. I know that Con Edison, their website may show pictures of their steam tunnels and some of that infrastructure. And I'm trying to think of who else. Possibly the water department. But I know Edison has a record of almost everything that's underground, because when they dig, they, have to be secure in the area they're digging. They make mistakes once in a while, but they're pretty accurate when they dig. So that might be a good place to start, and you might be able to find out more information on that, Rich. KC2WGB.
John, is there a slim possibility there's a website that'll show you some of that?
It might be available on Con Ed's website. I know they have some displays on there. But from there, once you get into that area, when you look at the listings, there may be a specific area where you can go to look at certain infrastructure mappings of, like, Manhattan, which is what you want to see, because that's extremely complicated.
Yeah, I suspect that Manhattan is more dense than any other place in the Western Hemisphere. I recently, because I was seeing all of the death and destruction taking place in Houston because of that extreme amount of rain, and they were saying that it's the fourth most populated city in the United States. Your first question is going to be, who's number one, two, and three? Number one is New York City, 8.3 million. I think number two was Los Angeles. Number three was Chicago. And number four is Houston, if I got it right. And Houston is 2 and a fraction million. So with 8 and a fraction million people on that one tiny island we call Manhattan, boy, that density of people per cubic mile, per square mile, per square kilometer, and therefore the number of infrastructure things below them, that's maintaining all of those people, all that water flow, all of that sewage flow, all those subways. A three-dimensional map would have to be very complicated. And I'm going to make a guess it is not a website, because that material could have some amount of terrorist capability as I see it. Over to you, John. Wait for the complete drop.
Comment.
KC2WGB. Yes, Dick. In fact, the last drawings I did were restricted, and probably for that reason. In fact, John, who was on before, we spoke about that the other night, and a lot of the sites that are vulnerable have been removed from the record exposure and drawings and things like that. I mean, you can still catch it on the Sanborn map and things like that, but that's only location. No pertinent data on structure and where it's located. Yeah, that, you're probably right. It's probably all limited now. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
Let's find out who the comment was. Was that Steve or John? Go ahead, comment. I heard somebody say comment. Who was that?
It was IXP.
KC2IXP.
Go right ahead, John.
The Office of Emergency Management has a very comprehensive computer program on New York City, both above and below ground.
Do you have reason to believe, John, that that is open to the public, or is that restricted?
It is restricted. It's a program called Cameo. It was made by the federal government. But it's a very, very interesting program.
I think you said that was the Department of Emergency Management. Is that the name of the organization?
The Office of Emergency Management, and they use a program called Cameo. Cameo, and Cameo has that information.
Well done, John. Thank you. So, at least you know where it is, Rich. Now getting authorization to be able to see it. You're going to have to pull some rank on that one. KQUPS, KQRIW. And out of curiosity, Rich, are you traveling east? And are you in Pennsylvania? Over to you, Rich.
Well, thank you for the station to check out the information. And I will do some digging and inquiries and see what I'm able to turn up. Sounds very interesting. Yes, I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm heading back east towards New York. And currently I am in very near Somerset, Pennsylvania, or in the vicinity of the Flight 93 memorial site near Shanksville. So kind of pinpoints where I am now, heading back home. KTUPS.
My guess is you'll be back on Long Island at 6 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Rich, go ahead.
Probably about that. We should be getting into Melville about 5:30. Then we got to go into Farmingville and then back to Queens. So I won't be done until probably 8 or sometime after 8, I would imagine.
And then let's see now. This is Monday coming up. Are you off for 24 hours, or do you have to 8 hours later go back out again?
Just under 24 hours. I leave again Tuesday morning, 6:30.
What a dedicated guy. And do you put on, a quarter of a million miles per year? Rich, just a very wild guess on my part. Go ahead.
Correct. It's a pretty good estimate. It's 5,000 miles a week. So it's roughly 250,000 a year.
Let's see now. In the case of the airlines, you get some free miles. You get some free trips. If you go number of miles. What do they call those? I can't figure them right now. That's too bad. You don't get those benefits, do you, Rich?
Frequent flyer miles.
There you go. Frequent flyer miles. You got more than enough miles to get frequent flyer mile benefits, Rich. Too bad. There's got to be some way of getting that. Over to you, Rich.
You go to the moon with that many miles.
And it's true, we don't get the frequent flyer miles. We used to get, I used to get a couple pennies for every gallon of fuel that we purchased on, like a frequent customer at certain truck stops, but the company did away with that. We fuel up all on property now, so. But now I'm compensated fairly well, so. All right, thank you for the info, and we'll keep listening. KTUPS.
Very fine. Let's see if Eric is available. KE2EJ, are you awake and brush your tail? Or have you gone to sleep? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. And 2APG. Go ahead, Dave.
I know you have a very wide and varied listening audience. I just thought I'd bring it to the table. There's a real pretty sight out tonight in the southeastern sky. Let's take a look. You'll see the moon is coming up. But along with the moon, a little bit below and to the right, is the planet Mars, which is looking real, real bright tonight. It's just a nice view.
I'm trying to think three-dimensionally. We're close to midnight. And Mars is just rising. If Mars was at my meridian at midnight, it means Earth and Mars are in opposition as close as they can get. Because Mars is just rising, it means that Mars is ahead of us. Yes, it's ahead of us in orbit. So sometime later in the year, we're going to have the closest spacing between us and Mars. We're going to have opposition probably a couple of months from now. Does your heavens above give you any hints along those lines, Dave? And 2APG, K2RIW?
I don't think it goes into that kind of detail. But there is a new feature on the heavens above webpage. They used to give you a whole sky chart, which was just a static display, which is still there. But they also have a new interactive sky chart, which you can punch on each individual star, and it'll give you information, you know, about that star and planets and things like that. So they've improved the whole sky chart. But like I said, anybody that, you know, has a passing interest in doing a little astronomy tonight, you know, need a telescope or binoculars. Just go outside and look in the southeast. You'll see the moon, and like I said, to the lower right of the moon is Mars. Can't miss it. Very bright.
In that sky chart that's supplied by heavens above, I'm pretty sure I can dial in different hours of the day, and I'm pretty sure I can dial in different days of the week or different weeks or maybe even different months. Therefore, I could plot the chart every week for the next few weeks, and I'm reasonably sure you're going to find Mars rising higher and higher at the same hour of the night, and eventually it'll be due south of you, and that's when Mars will be in opposition as close as it can get, and therefore at that time it'll be a little bit bigger than it is now. So will the chart let you do that, Dave, in 2APG, K2RIW?
Yes, you can adjust the parameters on the chart as far as the calendar date and the time, so you can fine tune it for in the future or in the past.
Any idea how far in the future and how far in the past? Could I go back 5,000 years with that?
Offhand, I don't know, but it might be that information might be available on the website as far as. Or when you access that feature, you can just probably punch it up. I think, you know, you get a little menu type thing where you punch it up and it drops down or something. So there might be something like that where I don't remember. or you have to physically just enter the, you know, the ear. Yeah, the star calendar, the star dates that people use these days, all of a sudden I've forgotten the name of it, but I've got a program that plots that, and so I'll give you some information on that in a minute. What's coming up next, Paul, space-wise? Probably no change yet on the big infrared telescope. The James Webb Telescope. I think that's still slated to be launched a little bit beyond the middle of the year, in the year 2018, I think. So, from all you can tell, that's on schedule. I from time to time, see them giving you pictures of them assembling the individual mirrors, putting them into the permanent structure of your bulb.
Yeah, I think that's September of 2018, so we got 2 years to wait for James Webb. But I, you know, what I consider recent, Mike, would be early May would be another Falcon launch. I want to see if they can land another booster on the the ship. Most people call it a drone barge, but it's really a ship. It's got these four big motors that turn 360 degrees in any direction. Quite a contraption, the landing ship that they have. But you've got other launches coming up. You've got the Delta Heavy. I want to see that go. That's going to be in June. That's three Delta Fours bolted together, and that'll be going up from Florida. And then another Heavy will be at the end of the year, and that would be by the Falcon 9 Heavy. So that'll be three Falcon 9s again bolted together, taking off from Florida. Originally planned on taking off from Vandenberg Air Force years ago, but that's now switched to Florida. And then you've got another SpaceX CRS-9 to bring up cargo to the International Space Station with the EITA on board. The EITA is the International Docking Adapter that they're going to attach to the pressure mating adapter number two that's already up there. And once they do that, that will be docking interface for these new crewed vehicles. And you'll see probably your first test of a crewed vehicle, probably unmanned, toward the end of the year. Either Boeing or SpaceX, I'm not sure which one's going to be able to go up first. Boeing has the Starliner, and SpaceX has the crewed Dragon. And they'll each be able to carry up to seven people, but probably in the beginning they'll have two people for testing it out. One will be a NASA astronaut, one will be from private, either from Boeing or from SpaceX. So that's all coming up. And then toward the end of this year, probably in September, I think they have another mission that's going to be launched, going to Bennu asteroid, and that's going to be a sample return mission, and that'll be coming up probably toward the end of the year. That's an Atlas V launch from Florida. A lot of little things going on, American-wise, anyway. Back to you.
I think this is the year that NASA's budget was expanded a little bit. Is it around $18 or $20 billion? Is their current budget roughly a pull? Go ahead.
Yeah, they got almost $19, and then now they just got the budget for 2017, and that'll be a little bit more than this year. They thought they were going to get less. They wound up with more. The Senate just passed that. Another mission I want to see go up is not far from here. It's going to be launched from Wallops Island, Virginia. And they're going to be returning to flight. They had that problem a couple of years ago with their Antares rocket that blew up with the NK-33 Russian rockets attached to it. And that's all been changed. Now they have all new rockets, RD-181s, and they're pretty much ready to go, and they'll probably launch end of June or so on the Antares rocket. Originally it was May, but I think due to scheduling, they're making it around June. But that's a great launch, because we could see it from here. You could look at the southeast, and you could see the light of the engine as it goes up. Low on the horizon, but I've seen it. Back to you there.
Pretty fine. While you were talking, I did a quick calculation. The star date changes at what you and I would call high noon at, I think, the Greenwich location. Okay, so tomorrow's date, April 25, as far as our local calendar is concerned, is Julian date number 2,457,503. 2,457,503. What the astronomers have done, they've decided on a particular date, 4,712 BC, which is going to be the reference, and they count all the days from that day forward, and therefore the Julian date is what they set their calendars to and do all the calculations with. This avoids the huge problem. Let me drop it. If you take your ordinary civil calendar and you try to figure out the how many days have passed, because the Earth is continuously moving, the Moon is continuously moving, the planets are continuously moving, if you know what I mean. And nothing is nice, round numbers. We call it 365 days per year. It's not exactly that number. That's an approximation. So you got some years with 28 days in February, and 29, you got leap years. You got the slow shift from year to year because things don't come out right. So they set this Julian calendar, 4,712 BC, and everything is a positive number of days calculated from that, and that makes things a lot simpler for them. So, now this wild piece of esoteric information. What's the current star date, the current Julian date? On Star Trek, they talk about star dates, but they didn't use numbers anything like that. I wonder if you guys saw 60 Minutes tonight. Something very striking took place. I'm going to ask John first and then Paul in that order. John, did you see 60 Minutes tonight? Over to you, John, K2RAW.
No, I didn't, Dick, but I'm interested to hear about it.
Paul, did you see 60 Minutes tonight?
Yeah.
I covered you up. Paul, did you see 60 Minutes tonight?
No, I recorded it. I will see it at another time, but I always record 60 Minutes.
60 Minutes got wind of something and they went and checked it. And even though they're not allowed to take their film crew in there, they took a hidden camera into the facility. What they revealed tonight is that both Republican and Democrats are congressmen must spend 30 hours per week on the telephone doing financing, doing collecting of contributions to the Republican Party and Democratic Party. They're not allowed to make financial telephone calls from their office. So both the Republicans and the Democrats, one block down the street, have set up their own telephone facility where they all must spend 30 hours per week collecting money. Let me drop it. That amazed the daylights out of me. And they got a great big chart on the wall with all of the congressmen's names on the chart and how close they're coming to their schedule. They've got to collect, I think it's $1,800 per day. They got to average X number of million dollars per year. and they got to spend 30 hours per day doing it. We know that the amount of congressional improvements in the last couple of years is a hell of a lot smaller than it's been recently. And if three quarters of their work, waking hours during the week are spent on financing and not doing real things, wow. There is a congressman from Florida who has put forth a bill where he tries to correct this. He can't get anybody to sponsor it. Six people, of the hundreds of people we got in Congress, only six people volunteered to sponsor it. In other words, it's dead on arrival. It's not going to change. 30 hours per week and X number of million dollars per year, each individual person must gather by asking for these contributions. That's amazing to me. Over to you for comment on that, John. KC2WGB, K2LAW.
Very good. Wow, I never knew that, never even knew that was going on. So, if you think the average person is 40-hour week, well, then what is he doing? He works 40 hours, spends 10 hours in the Congress or in the Senate, or does he put 40 hours there, possibly, and then 30 hours? That's 70 hours a week. I don't think that's going over big. I know that's not happening. I think that's just another disgusting element of the system. And I'm not surprised that he only got six people to agree with him. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
NY2H.
Hey, Lou, did you know about that before you saw 60 Minutes? Over to you, Lou.
So I did watch it, and no, I didn't. They did attribute it to Citizens United. Excuse my voice, I have a cold. But you know what they say? We've got the best Congress that money can buy.
Boy, there's a lot of irony in that statement. And Paul, I think you said you recorded it. You're going to see it later. That's a real shocker. It seems to me like a majority of their time is spent telephone soliciting, and only a small portion of the time do they have the ability to do what they were sent there to do. Let's see how Paul feels about this. WS2N, K2LAW.
Okay, well, with only six people that are able to sign on with this guy to back it, that's understandable. Everybody else is busy trying to raise money, you know. They don't have time to talk to somebody about changing something. I'll have to watch it later. That's what happened about McCloskey. She's the senator from Maryland, where the Hubble is controlled from. And she's retiring. She's been great for raising money for her state and all of NASA, really. Always pushing for a bigger budget. But I guess she's getting older and she wants to quit. But she's been terrific for decades now with back in the space program. I don't know who's going to replace McCarthy. I hope it's a pro-space senator. Back to you, Dick.
Good, Dick.
And I think the rough estimate was to get reelected, the campaign cost something like $100 million, and that's got to all be earned in that manner. All right, go ahead, John.
Dick, am I right in assuming that money, you didn't mention it, that goes to the national committees of each party? Is that what it is?
There's a yes and a no to that. I think it's 30 hours per week, and I forget the number of dollars that they've got to guarantee that they get on the average week. They pay a certain amount of dues to the national committee or to the Republican committee, to the Democratic or Republican committee. They pay a certain amount of dues to the committee, and a big portion of that is the nest egg that they've got to gather to make sure that when they come up for election, they got the ability to finance that election. So it's going to both places, as I see it, John. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just wondering where it went. Now, I guess what they're doing is they're financing their re-election, plus they're gleaning money from everybody else and all type of organizations. Yeah, it makes you wonder about what is the dollar value of getting elected. Incredible.
I hear numbers like $100 million are required to get re-elected. My goodness, that's a lot of money. Gotta be a way of correcting that. Wow. But 30 hours per week must be spent that way. And there's a great big chart on the wall with all of these names of all the congressmen and how well they're doing on their requirement. Who was that? Give me your call letters and name. Who is it that just signed in? Yeah, I'm sure there's a way we can go to CBS News and review the, I think that was the second segment of 60 Minutes tonight. Yeah, I think that was the second segment or the third. Wild. They haven't got time to do what they were sent there to do. The majority of their time is spent soliciting money. Wild. Okay. Have we run out of subjects to talk to? Are we going to quit a little bit earlier than normal tonight? What do you think, John? Or do you want to go to another one of the mailbags? It's your choice. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Now, Dick, you brought up a very interesting point. When you think about them actually on the phone soliciting for 30 hours, then you have other hours where they could be working on the nation's problem, but they're thinking about how they're going to actually create some kind of verbiage to convince people. So that takes up more of their time. They can't have that much time to work on the problems that we have, and maybe that's part of the issue. I wonder how long that's been going on. Is there any inkling on how long we've been putting up with this without realizing it?
John, they have a flow chart to follow, depending on the person's response. And they say it's been going on since Citizens United. They had one congressman who came back to Congress. He couldn't believe the change.
Roughly how many years ago was that, Lou?
I think it's the last 5 or 6 years.
Wild. And what Lou is telling us is that part of the program showed you this great big flow chart. The person you're soliciting money from, depending on what he says, you then start branching out as to what is the best thing for you to say to have the highest probability of getting the favorable response. So they're following this great big chart of each of those people we're talking to. It's all been worked out. Over to you, John.
Wow. Very disappointing to hear that. I'm not surprised that I'm sure if they keep digging, they're going to find out more things. But just shows you where this country is just not paying attention to what's going on. And it seems like everybody's just unconscious.
Well, I have reason to believe this is an extremely well-kept secret. There is a law that you're not allowed to do soliciting from your office. So the Republican Committee and the Democratic Committee set up a separate building, one for Republicans and one for Democrats, approximately a block away from their office, where they all go there and spend 30 hours per week soliciting funds, soliciting donations. Wow. It seems like they do a heck of a lot more soliciting than they do what they were sent there to do. And if this has been going on for 4 or 5 years, it's been a pretty well-kept secret. And 60 Minutes was not allowed to go in there with a camera. You've got to be a dues-paying member to be allowed in. Excuse me, let me drop it. And they found a volunteer who was a dues-paying member who got in with a hidden camera and documented this. And that's what you saw. You probably remember more of the details than I do, Lou. Let me ask you, Lou, did any of this shock you? I'm quite shocked. NY2H, K2RIW, and the Tech Man.
NY2H. Well, I think the ratio of the hours spent was certainly shocking. I knew that, you know, since Citizens United, there's complaints of undue influence. I guess Steve Israel, Congressman, he's resigning. And they asked him if he would vote for it, and he said no. You know, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, he admits there's a problem. And he said, on a scale of 1 to 5, if 1 meant that President Obama would sign it, it's ready to go, and 5 meant that it was going to fail, he says this is a 15. He says it'll never happen. But by the same token, they claim that the congressmen hate doing this, and I can understand that. But I guess it's so systemic now that they don't even have an escape, unless they all would get together, but no one will. This guy's really got no support. The guy from Florida, and he's running for Marco Rubio's old seat, so he's running for the Senate in Florida. And he said, if I don't make it, that's too bad. I don't care if I'm not senator, but, it's too bad for the country, and et cetera, because, the system. So they said to him, well, are you doing this because it's politically, it looks good? He says, oh, man, it looks good, but it is the correct thing to do.
Got a website, Dick.
Okay, you got a website? Give us some words on that one, John.
If you go to www.cbsnews.com, you can watch 60 Minutes. I just got that on the chat room. So for anybody who's interested, that's a way to watch it.
Very good, John. Lou, one of the things that was not clear to me, because I couldn't watch it directly, I had to do something else at the same time, is this true of all of our senators as well as all of our representatives? Is this all of Congress? I think the answer is yes, because if it was only senators, there would only be, 2 senators per state, 50 states, there'd only be 100 names. That chart had a lot more than 100 names. So I'm guessing that it's both all of our senators and all of our representatives. NY2H, K2RIW.
Yeah, I believe it's the totality, because, again, the fellow from Florida is running for the Senate. Maybe he's a congressman at this time, and he's running for Senate, doing a little promotion, whatever. And Steve Israel certainly is a congressman, and I guess the chart's big enough it could just be congressman, but I doubt it. That's, same parties, same system, same rules, so I'm sure they're having the senators do it also. And this is, the parties are forcing them to do it, but under the laws now. Since they opened the floodgates to money, I guess if you don't play the game, you lose. So it's systemic, and it's very hard to correct. And, I guess unless they all decided to jump on board to fix it, which probably is not going to happen, they're just living with it, it's rather sad.
Dick, do a fast calculation at that $1,800 mark plus all of the congressmen and senators. What do you get?
I think I'm wrong. There's a given number of dollars they've got to get on each individual day to make their schedule, and I think each individual person has got to earn, I think the number was $30 million per year. Was that the number you remember seeing, Lou, Brad?
I remember $18,000 per day. Now, I don't know if that value changes from seat to seat, or if it's an average value, or if it's a fixed value for all of them. Yeah, because they figured out how much he would need. I guess he had. I think the example was the guy had a half a year left or something, and they said in that time you've got to raise X amount, which is some exorbitant amount. Well, you could figure it out. You could times it, but I remember the daily amount was 18,000, 18 grand, and they furnished him with leads. They said this was more like a boiler room than market, marketeers on the phone probably work less time than these guys have to work doing the same thing. And he felt it was rather demeaning for a congressman to have to do that.
Yeah, I made a guess that they're doing it 320 days a year, not 365, and $18,000 a day is only $5.7 million per year. I think they're supposed to get $30 million per year. That's the number I vaguely remember.
Back to you, John.
Wow, that's a huge number. And I had no idea this was going on, but that's interesting. I might punch that website up myself and try to view that. I'm glad they did it, and I love these people that go in with cameras where they're not supposed to go. You know, as long as it's not a security issue, just exposing what could, you know, basically be, it's not criminal action, but it's just something we're not aware of, and it's hard to explain.
John, you should have watched it 2 weeks ago.
And what did you see 2 weeks ago, Lou, that got your, that raised your high, raised the back of the hair on the back of your head, your back of your right neck?
There are 28 pages in the 9/11 report which are redacted, and apparently the reason they're redacted is because the Saudi embassy in California helped out the terrorists.
I saw that one, Lou.
Yeah, I think that that was not direct help. In other words, they didn't know that they were supporting a terrorist activity, but I guess they were giving financial support to those individuals who turned into doing that. Isn't that one possible interpretation, Lou? NY2H, K2IW?
NY2H, well, I'll tell you. I turned on the TV, I don't know if it was yesterday, and Obama is sitting with the prince in Saudi Arabia, so I guess he's traveling now, and he was in Saudi Arabia, and I'm thinking to myself, these guys are concocting a cover story. Now, to what you said, I suppose, you know, I suppose it could be totally innocent. Could be a rogue faction. I think there's more to it, because I think the individuals that were entering the aid had some nefarious history, but I'm not sure. So hopefully we'll find out. The White House says a decision will be made shortly, because naturally there are calls to unclassify all that.
Go ahead, John.
And don't forget, they threatened to sell $800 billion of our debt. And they're going to put that on the market, which I really don't care if they do, but there has to be some reason they're coming back with that kind of slap in the face. They're covering something. What it is, it may be serious, it may not be, but that's an interesting point about them threatening to sell the debt.
With reference to this 30 hours per week soliciting money of essentially all of our congressmen, if 50% of the American public became very unhappy with that, what option do we have? What power do we have to change that? What do you think, Lou? NY2H, K2RW?
Oh, boy. Well, there are folks trying to change it. They want the Supreme Court to reverse the Citizens United decision, which called corporations people and gave them the right to, First Amendment right to speak, and they said, well, speaking, giving people money is speaking. I call it bribery, but they call it speech. So that'd be a start, and perhaps electing people that would support reform.
You have any ideas as to how we could correct this if we were sufficiently unhappy with it there, John? Over to you, John.
Well, I think what Lou just mentioned would be a great idea if they could reverse that decision, because it sure insulates these big donors, and some of it you can't even find out where it's coming from. You know, look at the situation with the Clinton Foundation, some of the money there, that funding. It seems that the funding is just not being tracked well, and there could be nefarious reasons for it.
Yeah, it's intermixed, I think, and, you know, she had, of course, business with foreign leaders, et cetera, and who knows, you know, what quid pro quo may have occurred.
Comment.
Go ahead, comment.
K2IXB. Article 5 of the Constitution provides the power of each individual state to ratify an agreement and establish
1,599. We're about to roll over the clock to 1,600. And space report number 198. We got into a little bit of cabbages and kings tonight. Didn't get into the politics of financing our Congress. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. Try to enjoy the hobby. Don't take it too serious. You're not going to get out of this one alive. Over to you, John. KC2WGB, K2IW.
Very good, Dick. Yes, interesting time tonight, as usual. I'd like to thank everyone for submitting the questions and some of the comments that were made and joining us on the net. It's always a pleasure. And everybody, be kind and be safe out there. Remember, it's a hobby. We're supposed to be having fun. So, 73, Dick, Paul, everyone on the net, and if all goes well, we'll be back again next week. KC2WGB, Paul, over to you, sir.
Okay, good night, John, and Dick. And if anybody wants to look at LimeOxTechNet.com, that's where the latest article that I put in there, Mike did for me. And it'll show a way to reduce the cost of getting to orbit. Get down to maybe 1/100th of what we're paying now eventually to put something into space, make everything inexpensive. We could all get on a rocket here and take off and get away from Earth and don't have to worry about what Congress is doing. 73, guys. Have a good night. Dick and Lou and everybody else on frequency. Back to you, Dick.
At first, that sounds good, Paul. But no matter where you go off of this planet, you're going to be living in a spacesuit. Are you sure you want to do that 24/7? Over to you, Paul.
Now you're going to have these big habitats, and you're going to float around in there and all the way to Mars. You got plenty of room, more room than you have in the International Space Station. It'll be comfortable. And I thought you were going to say, no matter what you do, you're going to bring the congressman with you back here.
Yeah, I didn't say that, but that's something to think about. Okay. Bye-bye, you all.
Well, if we get Donald Trump in, he could hire the Chinese. They'll do it for half the price. There you go.
And they'll even pay for another wall.
That's right. Good night, gentlemen. Out of fun. KC2WGB clear.
Dick, did you see the email that I sent you with helium cooler? I sent you photographs and took it.
I think he shut down, Wes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, nice segment. I was listening.
Yeah, again, it was a little different and very pleasant. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is a different approach right now of many people to TechNet than it was before. And also thanks to Dick's involvement and his voluntary education, plenty of people are right now to a lot higher in understanding things around. So that means that they either do not have that many questions, or they rather look for something in the form of just lecture that comes up based on the questions, but not necessarily they think that they need to interact and to interfere.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, many are listening and not commenting or saying anything, but a lot of interesting questions come in, and many times the same question is asked by a couple of different people, and I try to formulate it into one question. I don't have to ask basically the same question twice, so that works out. And but it's a lot of fun with some of these youngsters that have some of the questions, but TechNet's always interesting and always informative, and a lot of people are paying attention to it.
It's about 6 years I'm with TechNet, and At the beginning of that was me trying to force myself to any form, to have a courage of any form of interaction. So I was, whatever I was asking for, usually tasking. And later on, Dick says, well, so what is your question? I say, I don't have a question. Let me jump. Okay. Okay, so what is that you have? Well, I have a comment. I have a subject to discuss. And then, thanks to all of you guys, my vocabulary and my ability to interact became better and better. And then I was using it and going further. At a certain point, I find out that I'm sort of okay. And subject that I have discussed, a subject that I was trying to promote, are not necessarily in public interest, and they become extremely exotic. And then I find out that my involvement in the areas of science is not necessarily beneficial to the people who do not want to be there. They're being forced by me to be there. So why should I do it? Enter again.
Well, everybody who comes to the TechNet should feel comfortable asking whatever question they want, but to bring information and start to lecture on a subject that nobody has any use for or finds it difficult to understand or they don't even have a concept of what's going on isn't, you know, part of the TechNet, but tell some of the topics were perfect and some of them are less than perfect, but, you know, all that conversation is always good stuff.
Here we're done. Look, I have you, and that's enough. You are kind enough and patient enough to listen to exotic subjects. You interact. I have, thanks to you, chance to voice myself in a certain area. And eventually, it is helpful for me to memorize certain things. I used to use a lot of text that I was reading, and it's because I wasn't able to quickly formulate the sentences. And now I find out that I don't do it too often, or I don't do it at all. Yes, there are areas when I'm looking for the text, but rather as the reminder of, it's like instead of points on the paper, where am I going, what I'm talking about. So, yes, I'm extremely enlightened by you guys and thankful for your help. Interaction.
Oh, that's understood. I mean, I always enjoy comfortable conversation. I can't contribute much because what you're doing, I really know nothing about or any of that stuff. But some of the points are very interesting and easy to follow. Not much of it's complicated and all of it's been done before. But it's always interesting to hear what somebody's investigating or something they're doing, you know, to move on. That's always good stuff.
12 a.m. 73 and good night from the WQVL repeater.